Welcome back. It's time for Jeff and Erica. We do this Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 1 hour to try to give you the best information that we can collate and offer in terms of what is unquestionably the greatest, greatest collective crime against the human species ever. Beyond genocide. I know there's nothing beyond genocide technically, but the morality of this, the evil involved, it's worse than just genocide. This is horrible. Now, when you're out shopping and you're eating food, understand that food is kind of like medicine. You don't want to take the wrong stuff. Treat food like it is your body's medicine. Think about it. It is. So you've got to eat right. You've got to eat clean, and you've got to lose that weight before you get nuked. You don't want to get nuked when you're fat. It's a little joke. But things are not good out there. So we're trying to reflect. You all have a front row seat to this. We do too. We're watching the end of a long-term status quo of the white Western Christian world that's being taken down, and everything is moving to Asia now. And the next 100 years are going to be the century of the Asian empires, speaking in terms of finance and, well, all kinds of businesses. Mercedes-Benz has just closed up, or they're in the process of closing up in Germany and moving to China. Mercedes-Benz. And there's another one just as big, and I can't remember what it is. I want to say Bayer, but I don't think it's Bayer. But it's another huge corporation in Germany. They're closing up, and they're moving to China. So you get it. And they'll be doing fine over there. This is the age of the Asian empire, the business empire of Asia. Hello there, young lady.
Hello.
What are you doing?
I'm listening to you.
Well, all right. Now, when Erica and I go shopping, and when you go shopping, I know most of you are aware of the simple fact that you almost invariably will hear someone hacking and coughing. It's standard. It's so common. Everybody's got the COVID cough. Now, they'll tell you, oh, no, I don't have COVID. But do they? And the answer is they've got something related to it somehow, some way, and they're coughing. And there's a new graph out, and I didn't post it, but we can kind of talk about it. But certainly there are a number of things that can cause coughing. And I guess the big question is, when you look at people coughing, are they trying to cover their mouths? And with the new N95 masks study that came out last week, it showed that the good N95 masks will prevent the exhalation of 95-97% of the viral particles that can transmit whatever it is you got if it's infectious. So a mask works both ways. It stops the exhalation and spreading and shedding and contamination. And it also stops the inbound version of the same. So don't laugh at masks. Don't make a constitutional rights issue out of it. Your health is on the line. There are other things that cause respiratory coughing. Number one in my book would be invader tuberculosis. They're coming in all the time with TB. TB, a lot of TB. What are some of the other things that can cause coughing?
Well, pulmonary hypertension, blood clots.
Yeah.
Pulmonary fibrosis, COPD, amyloidosis, sarcoidosis, and lung cancer.
Among even others. Those are issues, all right?
Well, those are a lot of issues of, I would say, some prominence right now.
You betcha.
you know, it's not always that somebody has an infection that for the reason for their cough. But I notice it a lot. And the other day I noticed it in a little kid. I was shocked at how much this kid was coughing. Now, whooping cough is going around. I evidently in the UK it's rampant. Hmm. And I suspect we, you know, I don't know if it's quite as bad here, but we're having cases of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can, you know, it doesn't have to be a terminal illness necessarily. It's also known as the 100-day cough. It takes a while to get over it, but it's a bad respiratory thing.
Mm-hmm. What causes whooping cough? Bacterial?
Well, I believe it's bacterial, yeah, pertussis, yeah, bacterial. Mm-hmm. So because, you know, they typically give it with that DTAP shot, DTAP
uh-huh.
shot.
Yeah.
And that's a bacterial toxin, toxoid shot.
Coughing increased dramatically in 2022 compared to the year before. We've got, a little graph here I'm looking at. In 2021, coughing increased linearly with age. The same in 2022. But the gradient in 2022 is about, that's the upward arc of the graph, is about twice as steep. So twice as many people developed a cough in 2022. And 2023 is following the same gradient upward arc as 2022. So this is not a good thing. And you speak about shedding, and certainly coughing would be at the top of the list, probably, of mechanisms by which you can shed and spread things, lots of things. But don't discount the TB, please. And if you've got children in school with these illegals, these invaders, you really should get them out. I'm sorry. I know it's easy for me to say and hard for you to do, but your children are so precious. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that there is now an increase in some of these fungal infections of the lung. You know, we had that case that we read last week with the mucormycosis, which is that black fungus, and that can be invasive. You know, that can have a high mortality rate if it gets out of control. And then the other one is aspergillosis, which is often mistaken as for cancer. Aspergillosis of the lung. Or, you know, this fungal ball can actually form anywhere, but there is a version of it that forms in the lung. And we are seeing an uptick in that.
Tick, tick, tick.
Yeah. These fungal infections are, you know, indicative of people that are having immune system suppression.
We can certainly, for sure, point to 80%+ of all Americans, for example, as having immune problems, serious immune problems.
Yeah. Yep.
What else here? Anything else about the coughing thing?
Well, it's just, you know, we're not imagining it. People are coughing more.
Yeah, I hear it every time I'm out. Action news. Everyone. Now, here's another one. Sepsis. A lot of people see the word sepsis, honestly, and a lot of people don't understand what it is and how it destroys life, how it can take you out. You might want to, I got a little video here that you sent me. We'll play that. But explain to people what sepsis is, just real simply.
Well, it's when a bacterial infection has gone beyond wherever it entered, wherever it was festering, and into the bloodstream and gone systemic. And then the immune system starts to go berserk, basically. And you can get that disseminated intravascular coagulation where you get blood clots everywhere. And then multi-organ failure. It very often is a life-ending situation. And we seem to be having an epidemic now of people turning up in the emergency rooms with sepsis. And it needs to be addressed rather quickly if the person's going to make it.
And that's usually IV antibiotics as a frontline first step?
I would guess. That's not my bailiwick.
Right.
But they need supportive care at the very least, because their bodies will shut down. Like I said, they will go into this multi-organ failure, and that's the end. You know, kidneys start failing, liver starts failing. It's interesting that, there's more and more people. Even John O'Looney had a clip, a couple of weeks ago. He was talking about how everyone going to the hospital now has sepsis. But they're not correlating it with, these injections that they had that have destroyed their immune systems. And so, sepsis can arise, it doesn't have to come from something external. You have enough bacteria in you that if these barriers are breached, for example, the gastrointestinal tract, you've got several pounds of bacteria in there. And
seven pounds on average for an adult.
Yeah, it's quite substantial. And so some of this bacteria can translocate across the intestinal wall into the bloodstream. And depending on which type of bacteria it is, it can be very inflammatory and cause an immune system reaction that ends up as sepsis.
Even if you don't have an immune system to react, it'll still cause problems. I mean, you do have you'll have a marginal immune system if you've been injected multiple times with this crap. But quite right.
Don't realize it, but they're walking around with a subclinical endotoxemia quite often from a leaky gut. They have dysbiosis. They have an abundance of bad bacteria in the gut, and depending on their diet and the state of inflammation, this bacteria will get into the bloodstream, and it wouldn't necessarily make you sick right away. Might just feel under the weather a little bit, but if it gets out of control, it can really wreak havoc on the person.
Here's a little news story out of Pittsburgh talking about sepsis in hospitals and more. Let's see what this
Well,
has
I think
to
it's,
say.
It's the just the increase in death rates of people going to the hospital,
And I wonder what percentage of those deaths are sepsis now. I bet it's substantial. I bet it is. Unless the staff is right on their toes, they might miss it. And in some cases, it's a matter of minutes. And you go from sick to critical. It can be real bad. All right. Here we go. Death rates at Pittsburgh area hospitals. I think we can extrapolate that, can't we, to most big cities?
I would say it's representative of many hospitals in the country right now.
Right. All right, let's see what these people have to say.
Action News Investigates has learned death rates at area hospitals are going up.
At some hospitals, mortality rates for some conditions have more than doubled in 5 years. Investigative reporter Paul Van Osdahl is live for us in Sewickley tonight. So, Paul, why is this happening?
Well, Andrew, experts cite a variety of reasons, from sicker patients to staffing shortages. Action News Investigates spoke with one woman who says her father died at a local hospital after waiting more than an hour to see a doctor.
There's something I'll never forget.
Yeah, well, that's bad enough, but we've heard stories of people waiting, 10, 12 hours sometimes to see a doctor?
Yeah.
I mean, 1 hour, that's the fast lane.
And it's very hard to speak about, but it's not right how he was treated.
In February 2022, Jamie Toth's father, John, went to UPMC McKeesport Hospital complaining of chest pains. According to her lawsuit, he waited an hour and a half before a doctor saw him.
I didn't understand their lack of urgency to somebody that is sitting here clearly distraught.
When John finally saw a doctor, he had a heart attack and died. He was 67. In court papers, UPMC denies any negligence or recklessness and says their records show John was treated earlier than the lawsuit alleges.
This was his time to be retired and enjoy family and enjoy life and to finally relax. and that opportunity was taken from them.
A state report says the Pennsylvania hospital mortality rate for 11 conditions, ranging from heart failure and stroke to sepsis and pneumonia, increased from 2017 to 2022. The most recent year data is available. That does not include COVID cases. A spokesperson for the State Hospital Association tells Action News Investigates, any increase in in-hospital mortality is concerning, and we are working to dig deeper and meet with hospital quality leaders to better understand the cause and what can be done to address it.
Now, the other thing about hospitals now, and we've had ample testimony about this, is that many of them have a COVID protocol, which might well be called a COVID death protocol. They'll bring people in, they'll use a bogus PCR test on them to determine that, yes, you have COVID, and then they'll give them remdesivir, which is almost a guaranteed ticket out the door,
yeah.
The back door. And this is policy. And we've had stories here about how some former hospital employees have just walked. They're sick of watching people be murdered. No joke.
Mm-hmm.
Quality data looks like it's inching in the wrong direction.
Dr. Paul Frampas, UPMC's medical director of patient safety, says one reason for that, patients are sicker.
So we're seeing a population that's sicker because they've had things that weren't caught in screening, or they've had indolent little problems that have become bigger problems. So the people that are actually inside the hospital now are sicker than they have been before.
One of the biggest concerns is sepsis, an infection that left untreated can lead to death.
The sepsis problem is really challenging.
State records show the sepsis mortality rate from 2017 to 2022 doubled at Butler Memorial Hospital and Heritage Valley Beaver, and tripled at Heritage Valley Swickley. The chief physician at Independence Health, owner of Butler Memorial, says in a statement that nearly all cases involved patients with severe chronic medical conditions coupled with a sudden affliction. This combination results in a very high severity of illness and an ensuing poor prognosis. A nurse at Heritage Valley Beaver says early detection is critical to treating sepsis.
The clinical signs that lead to sepsis can be missed if you're not focusing on especially the patient's vitals and looking at the patient and seeing how they're acting.
Experts say staff shortages can impact sepsis treatment.
We're elevating and putting less experienced people into positions where previously were filled by very experienced people. It makes it very challenging to intervene early when we're looking at, for sepsis, for example.
Mortality rates for respiratory failure have also increased, up 50% at UPMC Mercy and nearly doubling at UPMC Passavant. Dr. Frampas says he and others at UPMC are working on it, using simulations like these so medical staff can respond to a crisis quickly.
We have been, as a system, looking at all of our protocols, all of our algorithms that do two things. One is prevent people from getting worse once they have a minor respiratory infection to progress to a significant respiratory infection that lands them in the ICU. And then secondly, adjusting our ICU care to make sure it is always aligned with best practices.
A Pittsburgh group that monitors patient safety says the increased hospital mortality rate is not just a local problem.
We need to start looking at our major categories of harm and preventing harm before it occurs.
The Jewish Healthcare Foundation is leading an effort to create a national patient safety board modeled after the NTSB. Instead of failures like the Fernhallow Bridge collapse or the East Palestine derailment, the patient safety board would investigate chronic problems that lead to patients dying.
It is a...
Okay, let's stop it right there. It's interesting to hear East Palestine again. I haven't heard about those poor people in a long time.
No.
The train derailment, you remember? And they all were exposed to horrific amounts of fatal toxins that spread all over the area and over all the way to the east, all the way up into Canada. It went up in the air and just rolled along. Okay, so the big part that stuck with me from the director, what he said, was that less and less qualified staff
Well, we've heard that before, right?
We certainly have. And so the point is, don't go to the hospital unless you have to. And for goodness sakes, again, please write down the do's and don'ts that you will go in there, and either you or your advocate will hand to the admissions tech and say, absolutely, you follow this or you're going to get sued. That's what I'd do. No remdesivir, number one. And a lot of these people who have long-term chronic health issues, those are shot up people 3.5 years ago. And they've been
sick. Yeah, and they're not going to admit that.
Never. Not a chance. So it's a real risky thing to go into a hospital. And I understand that you sometimes have to go. But if you take care of yourself and don't have any accidents, chances are you won't have to go. Clean your diet up. Take care of yourselves. Food is essential. And you can't eat something like Hostess cupcakes with over 60 different ingredients in them and expect to get away with this for very long. Now, let me transition from that to reminding all of you. And I get a lot of email from people who thank me. It's not me, but they're expressing their gratitude for Allison C. And many are now keeping it in the house at all times. It's essential to have this. I would take one a day, especially if you've been injected. You need to help your immune system, what's left of it, function as best as it is possible to do. And Allison C will make that difference. If you get an infection, a bacterial infection, Allison C will not destroy that 7 pounds of bacteria you must have in your digestive tract to properly digest food and extract minerals, vitamins, and nutrition from that food. You lose that bacteria with any antibiotic, and doctors do not tell you how to repopulate appropriately. Some people find that they can never recover the proper amount of bacteria and the balance that they had before they took a strong dose of, say, doxycycline or something like that. It's very important. So Allison C, and I'll say it again, is the world's most powerful, broad-spectrum, panoramic antibiotic, all-natural, non-pharmaceutical antibiotic that exists on the planet. And so many people, I talked to somebody the other day, and they were just saying, thank you again. It's helped all of us. Anyway, that, and number two, is the most important nutritional supplement, I think, of all, and that's BioSuperfood. You can't possibly do better than that. You have anything you want to say about BSF?
Oh, I think it's a superfood. It really does supply, as I've said before, everything you need to replicate a healthy cell.
I take about 7 or 8, the little tiny green algae.
Yeah, they're
capsules.
Very small. And you know, and I first came across this product when I had a sick cat, and I was trying to get some nutrition in him, and I was looking for some kind of a vitamin or dietary supplement that I could get into him that would meet his most, you know, basic nutritional needs.
Sure.
And I came across the product on a holistic veterinary website, and I ordered it, and I was very pleased to see the size of the capsule. It's very small, and it was easy to give to him, and, you know, he did recover, you know, whether it had to do with the product or not. I felt better supplying him with some nutrition. And then I started reading more about it, and I said, well, maybe I should take this. And I've taken it ever since. And you can feel a difference with it. It's you wouldn't think that you could feel a difference with such a small.
Yes.
You know, I take probably 6 every, almost every day, I would say. But
I throw them in my drink.
Yeah. Because, you know, these nutrients, critical nutrients, are missing from the modern diet. The soils are depleted.
Yes.
There's green harvesting. There's all kinds of different toxins in you know, applied to the plant. You know, your gut is just struggling to assimilate nutrients, and this just makes it easy. You know, it's pre-digested, preformed by the algae, so it's already broken down. There's no digestion necessary. It's cell-ready, can pass right through the intestinal tract into the bloodstream and be uptaken by your cells.
You know how many different nutrients, friends? I've said this before. Some of you will remember. Over 15,000 micronutrients, many of which you will never see. If you eat the average diet, you'll never come across them. So, yes, you feel the difference. It's a product. It's composed of the four most potent algaes on the planet. It's grown in a closed, safe, underground environment in Kamchatka in Russia and sent to Canada and then brought down here. And it is a supremely important product, just like Allicin C. Those two are the best things I can recommend that people take as a baseline step toward trying to stay healthy in this horrible environment of ours. It's really bad. And food is so toxic. There's one other thing that algaes do. We talked about this recently. I was trying to remember what algaes can do for the body that are relevant to today's problems. Do you remember what that was?
Well, one of the things is that the chlorophyll in these algaes, remember, chlorophyll is almost identical in terms of its structure to heme. And the difference mainly is that chlorophyll has magnesium at its center and heme has iron at its center. But the chlorophyll, and they have actually studied and published papers on this, can actually deliver electrons to the mitochondria. And, people who have gone to high altitudes, if they take chlorophyll, it helps them adapt to the low oxygen, or I shouldn't say lower oxygen, but the less atmospheric pressure up there, faster. You know, you're not as winded. So, and the other thing that these things are known to do, these chlorophyll-based products, are detoxify. In nursing homes, they'll often give chlorophyll to the residents because it minimizes the odor coming from their stool.
All right, well, there you go. Bio superfood. There's no hyperbole involved with that. It is exactly that. I think you could actually live on it if you had to.
It's missing the calories, but the nutrients are there.
Right. Okay. So that's a little straight advice, not commercial pitches, but the truth for all of you out there. Easy to order, right online. I've got banners for both on the homepage. And you have a good source for that, I understand. Oh, never mind. Okay. I just wanted to hear you laugh. Okay. Here we go. Here's a video from Children's Health Defense. Now, this is one of the luckiest men, patients, people that you're going to hear about. Boy, did they try to kill this guy off, and somehow he's still alive. This is quite a story.
Well, let me just say that the take-home from this is this woman, the wife of this person who was in the hospital, was very familiar with the medical
30
establishment.
Years.
I think, yeah, she was an administrator, I think, in a hospital. She was very steeped in protocols and that. So she was prepared. She was not going into this blind, and they still almost killed her husband.
Right. Now, she's going to mispronounce remdesivir, but you'll know what it is when you hear it. Just want to make sure that you get it. It's remdesivir. All right. Here we go.
I'm telling the story. It's about your husband. It's a hospital protocol situation. There he is. My first question to you is, did your husband take the COVID-19 shot?
Absolutely not. I have a vaccine-injured adult son with autism, and so we've been following all of the truth for years, more than 20 years. So, no, we don't vaccinate here.
So what led him to, you know, go to hospital? What happened that led up to that?
He had just been in India in November, so he had been on hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, and he developed the Omicron variant around December 19th.
Now, that's interesting in and of itself. He had HCQ and ivermectin going as a routine, and yet he still came down with the Omicron variant, all right? So prophylactic treatment sometimes works, sometimes it doesn't.
Cleared that and was testing negative 4 times by Christmas Eve. So he was fine. It wasn't COVID.
He tested 4 times negative for COVID. Well, we'll see.
He then developed a GI bug, probably because his immune system had been affected, and he became dehydrated and...
And go ahead, Lori.
In a period of about 4 days, and I was doing a procedure called thoracic pump just to make sure that his lungs were clear, and I heard him aspirate. Our primary physician was on the phone talking me through it, and I had been in healthcare for 33 years. I know what aspiration sounds like. And then 4 days later, which is typical of aspiration pneumonia, his oxygen stats were not able to be kept up. We're not from Virginia originally, so I didn't know what hospital to send him to. So I chose the only one in the area that had an outpatient pharmacy because I thought, okay, we'll identify the appropriate antibiotic, and I'll run the IVs at home, and he'll be there less than a week. 3 months later at that hospital and all the way into July from January, things turned out very differently because they had an agenda.
Did you use the pulse thing on the finger to look at the oxygen stats?
We did, and I didn't know at the time that we have a soft hyperbaric chamber that if I had put him in there, we could have avoided all this. I learned that after the fact, but he was in the high 70s, and I was concerned, but we did put in place a power of attorney and advanced directives, refusing remdesivir, refusing vent. You know, we were pretty well educated about the dangers. It's something we really wanted to avoid.
So who took him into hospital?
I had to call the ambulance because he was so weak from dehydration, and so he went in by ambulance.
And were you able to go with him?
I met him there, and I was with him in the ER for 9 hours, and then all of a sudden they decided that they were going to admit him. 4 people came into the room. They started wheeling him away. They didn't even say, would you like to be admitted? We'd like to admit you. None of that. And I already had a mark on me because the ER doctor wanted to immediately start remdesivir before even testing him, not doing a sputum culture, none of the typical tests that you would do for someone coming in with respiratory issues. And when I talked about remdesivir and why we were refusing it, because he asked, why wouldn't we want that? I cited the Ebola trials and all of that, and he just rolled his eyes. We weren't being taken seriously.
Ask if your husband had taken the shot.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's probably 50 references in the chart saying elderly unvaccinated male. They started most of their notes with elderly unvaccinated male. Now, John was 69 when he was in. Many of these doctors were that same age, but that's how they referred to him. And the nurses had told him that if he had taken the shot, he wouldn't have even been there. But he was there for aspiration pneumonia. They refused the pulmonologist. They refused the sputum test. They refused all the standards of care. And then they withheld nutrition and hydration. He went in at 186. He came out at 128. He was begging for water. He was already dehydrated when he went in. And then there were notes written many months after his discharge. They were backdated to February 22. I know that because I looked at every note in the portal every day, saying that they were withholding fluids because they suspected CHF, congestive heart failure, which he doesn't have a history of. And they would have been easily able to rule that out in the emergency room. So that was a bogus note to protect them.
So he goes into hospital. They're going to admit him. They want to put him on remdesivir. At what point are you not allowed to be with him?
He was immediately isolated for the first 20 days. before they even did a PCR on him. He was immediately isolated. I had sent in proof of my antibodies because I was working in healthcare so early on, May of 2020.
Do you suppose what grounds did they use to decide to isolate him if he didn't have COVID? Was there 4 PCR tests run or something? And he was negative, negative, negative. So I wonder what grounds they isolated him on. If he's got congestive heart failure, that's not contagious. Odd. It's a crazy hospital. All
right. I had antibodies, and I also had T cells. And anyone who had worked in medicine for years would know that T cell immunity is permanent. I sent all that into the hospital. I still wasn't allowed to go in. So he spent his birthday alone, the first 20 days alone. They wouldn't allow him food. They wouldn't allow him out of bed. So he became progressively weaker with lots of muscle wasting. But at that point, we could text all day long. They continued him on high flow for a month and a half, which was very damaging to his lungs. And they gave him the cocktail of meds that most people in this situation would get. They started him on Prozac right away. He hasn't been depressed in his entire life.
I'm sorry, I got to say something. That's really crazy. That's bordering on grotesque, not just gross, grotesque negligence. The first medication they put him on was an SSRI. Wow.
Yeah.
Anti-anxieties. They kept saying he was anxious. He was not anxious. We were texting. He was lonely. He was alone. And we even had doctors who would write about what they heard in his lungs, but he would say, no one ever came into the room today. He was just alone. After that, on the 21st day, I was allowed back in, but it wasn't long before, because I was challenging them and asking for nutrition and supplements and all of that, they orchestrated to have me banned. So I wasn't with him for the first 20 days, and I wasn't with him for the last month and a half that he was in that hospital. But he had 4 consecutive hospital stays after we got him out of ANOVA Fair Oaks. He went to...
That's incredible. A month and a half, she wasn't allowed in there. That's inhuman, the protocols that I'm hearing. That's not medical. That's not compassionate. It's just, no. This is nuts.
There are ANOVA hospital within the system, but it was much better there. Not great, but better.
So
his lungs are damaged.
So that first 20 days or whatever, he wasn't given food or water. Is that why he lost so much weight?
He was already dehydrated, and the hospital food was very dry. So he was allowed to order trays, but they wouldn't give him water. They'd give him a cup of coffee in the morning, and if he asked for water, they'd give him 4 ounces. But because he was so dehydrated, he just couldn't swallow. He couldn't eat the food that was being offered to him.
And this all stems from their cursory diagnosis of CHF? Come on. That doesn't make any sense.
He would ask for things like pudding and Jell-O and things that would help hydrate him, but he wasn't allowed any of that. So as he became more and more dehydrated, he wasn't able to swallow and eat. So and there were periods where he was just so sedated, there was no food. So he lost so much weight, and there was so much muscle wasting. And he wasn't allowed out of bed from the time he hit the ER until he was brought home on a stretcher. And they didn't want him to come home either. They wanted him to go to an LTAC. And because
no, he wasn't dead yet. They didn't want him to go home until he was dead. Unbelievable.
Discharged him with hospital-acquired pneumonia. He had 3 additional pneumonias during that stay. He would have died in an LTAC because they would not have called the doctor. They would not have sent him back to the hospital.
Have you seen his medical records from the whole stay?
What we can find, we have 19,000 pages. They've withheld the medication administration records, and they've withheld some other things, and there are gaps. There's no note in there about why I was banned, why there was a sitter just for one shift. There were notes in there about me being hostile and them having to talk to me about hospital violence, employee violence issues, but I wasn't an employee, so that didn't even apply. But there are so many things missing. And then there are inconsistencies in the chart where one nurse would say he's intubated and a doctor will say he's not intubated and vice versa. The notes don't even match up. This chart has been so modified and they are withholding some things from us still.
All right. I'm going to pause it there. Is there anything else we need to hear? He's lucky to be alive, obviously. He was traumatized, abused, mistreated. This is not modern medicine, supposedly. This is horrible.
Well, and the shocking thing is that there's identical stories to that all over the place.
All over the place. This is not uncommon. You must, don't wait. Tonight, just sit down for 10 minutes and write up a little list of things. No remdesivir, whatever, in case I go in the hospital. Put down your contacts. Just have that ready. There's probably a guideline on the net somewhere what you should do before you go in the hospital. But do this, because God help you if you go in there, or anyone who goes
well,
in there.
Well, you know, at the conclusion of all these various interviews where people are relating these horror stories, you know, Polly asked them, you know, what would you tell people at this point based on your experience? Universally they say, I will never go into a hospital myself. I will avoid it at all costs. Yeah. You can't trust them. That's the common theme. And so you do have to try to decouple yourself from that system.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
To the best of your ability, because you're really, you will be at their mercy.
Total mercy. And she was not allowed in there for a month and a half. How is she going to go in there and advocate for her husband, for God's sakes?
Yeah.
This is crazy. Crazy. That's inhuman. No. Oh,
so I don't know what sort of incentives, if they're still doing incentives to follow these death protocols, but apparently there's still a lot of shenanigans happening.
I believe it. I certainly believe it. We'll get Nurse Anne back on here as soon as she's able, and we're going to find out. She's got a lot of stories we're hearing and ready to go, so we'll find out. Okay, let's jump over to our human file for this episode. May 29th, we've got pneumonia, sepsis, May 29th. See that?
Yeah, let me get there. Yeah, hold on.
Six down on my list.
Got it.
Okay, go ahead.
Three of my cousins, born in the 60s, just passed of so-called pneumonia and blood toxicity. Anyone else? We aren't making it to 70. Let's see. Someone says bacterial pneumonia is rampant in the jabbed, along with sepsis. Sorry for your loss. It is relentless. Yeah.
Right. There's another one above, mother-daughter sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Do that one, too.
The vaccine killed my beautiful mother. Her name is Linda. I say is because she's alive with Jesus now. I wish it would just kill me now sometimes, too. I don't know how to go on without her. I'm on disability from it. I'm a Delta flight attendant with brain aneurysms 3 hours after they jabbed me. I cannot fly. I would take 10 more if it would bring my mama back.
Oh, my.
Mm.
See, these stories are endless. They're endless, and they're horrible. And there's so many people suffering. They may still be able to walk around and function, but psychologically, emotionally, and then physiologically, just from the ground up, there can be any number of things that they're suffering from. It's just awful what's been done to humankind. Okay. Yeah, there's one called Shill here. Then we got, all right, here, turbo liver cancer.
How about this vax still required?
Transplants. Good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, my husband needs a lung transplant. Lungs are scarred beyond repair. In order to get the transplant, the hospital requires all immunizations, including the big one, be up to date. Doctor says there's no way around it. This is his only chance at life. Unreal to me that they are old and complicate things by demanding he be vaxxed. And the people start chiming right in. There's a group called Medical Mandates. Are you kidding me? Or kidney me? Where they have found other hospitals who don't follow that protocol of you know what. Join that group and search there. Love, and I'm sorry you are dealing with this. I cannot even imagine. And someone adds to that, doctors who refuse to have the vax themselves. Someone else says, don't do it. He'll die. And another, this is so effed up. These doctors need to be sued. That's, you know, suing a doctor is not the way to go. I don't know.
Well,
what,
you've got no, if they're following protocol, then they're covered.
No, it's just not going to happen. They are murdering for money. They know the jab is dangerous. Well, they certainly do, and if they don't, they should. Even if he gets a transplant, says another, what are the chances the donor received the pickle juice? Therefore, the lungs are useless and contaminated. Absolutely mm-hmm. correct. Go right ahead.
Yeah, so that means that there's no choice.
None. No.
You know, just which way do you want to die?
Yeah. Finish up. There's two more. Go ahead.
All right. My grandson may be facing this as well. He has kidney disease and may eventually need a kidney transplant. He is 11 years old and never had any jabs. They handed his parents a list of 120 jabs that he would need.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Praying his kidney stay stable and praying for med beds. This is unacceptable. May they all rot in hell.
Too good for them.
You know, that's good.
Nope.
And this is a separate post. Same thing. The Mayo Clinic rejected mom's lung transplant due to lack of full COVID vaccination. Mayo with a side of murder?
Yeah,
and
there you go.
There's actually, they took a screenshot of this letter on the Mayo Clinic's letterhead to this patient, dear so-and-so, based on guidance from the American Society of Transplantation and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, we require all lung transplant patients receive full vaccination against COVID-19. At this current time, you indicated that you have not received a COVID-19 vaccination. If you want to be considered for a lung evaluation, you will first need to obtain this vaccination and provide proof that it has been obtained. And that is dated May 18, 2024.
See, they're gonna kill you. Either way, they'll kill you with the vax, the death vax, or they'll kill you with a contaminated lung. you're dead. And if you get any transfusions, you're double dead.
There's no choice here.
It's completely macabre. It's totally weird. It's insane. All right, here's another one. Vaccine carnage. Update on our son, who's 40 years old. After 3 COVID shots required by the FAA, probably a pilot, he had his thyroid removed yesterday, the result of a growth attached to it. He also had lymph nodes that were suspicious and were also removed close to the thyroid. Our son is the 4th person we know of. Growth on their thyroid after the COVID shots. My sister died 2 weeks ago from all kinds of problems after her COVID shots. What the hell is going on and why aren't the news outlets sharing the truth? Well,
not sharing the truth.
Not sharing. Capital N. Why are the news outlets not sharing the problems? Well, it's sad that most people still think that the damn mainstream media is telling you the truth. No, it's a lie or the lie by it's lie of omission. That's how they play it. All right. Someone says, I've had growths on my thyroid since birth. Nothing to do with COVID. Something that happened during pregnancy, according to my doctor. Unfortunately, adds another, the news is largely sponsored by Pfizer. They're not going to bite the hand that feeds them. Wow. Another adds, recently talked with a doc loosely assimilated with the VA, and they said that it is known that ionizing radiation can cause goiters, and the timetable of when they could form is not rigid. It might take 20 or more years, etc. All right. Anyway, that's enough of that one. Let's go on to another one. We've got a couple of minutes here. Let's jump down to, well, May 13. All right. Father diagnosed with motor neuron disease. There's one.
Didn't we do that one?
I don't know.
Okay.
Harry Fisher. Two Harry Fishers. We can do it again. Here's another one with nicotine in it. But go ahead. Whichever.
Oh, are we doing
Father
Harry
diagnosed
Fisher?
With motor... I do Harry Fisher with miscarriages. That's fine.
All right. Paramedic venting. Right after the COVID vaccine was offered to pregnant women, we saw a surge in spontaneous abortion, miscarriages. The amount of people losing their children was horrific. It was like a maternal holocaust. As a paramedic, I saw 9 patients miscarrying in one shift. That's just one shift.
Oh,
the bleeding
incredible.
Was so bad, I had to have additional staff help clean up multiple times.
Wow.
And he continues, for clarification, this was a terrible shift. I work contracts, ER, ICU, and ambulance. Some of the ERs I work in also have ambulances attached to the hospital. So I'm ER and ambulance staff, which I've stated many times now. This contract in question was ER. We paramedics have been utilized a lot in emergency rooms, especially since COVID hit. I've also seen more miscarriages on ambulance than I've ever witnessed before post-vaccine. The ER waiting room chairs were covered in blood. We were busy with everything, and some were having to just sit in the blood, waiting. Had to call janitorial staff to clean the chairs. I've told this story many times now. Saw similar scenarios in Oklahoma and North Dakota. North Dakota, I was on ambulance that was attached to the ER. I hope that helps clarify. I forget many people don't know how we paramedics are utilized across the board. We aren't just ambulance drivers.
Not at all. Interesting, they're pressed into service in the ERs.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Wow. Well, they're on the right the front edge of it all. Come on, people sitting in blood.
I just can't even imagine what some of these paramedics have seen, have witnessed.
No. And they're still able to do that kind of work.
Yeah, yeah.
That is really a shocker. Shocker.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if some of them don't have PTSD by now.
I would think I would never be the same. I wouldn't.
No.
All right, let's do one more here. People still think nicotine is the magic bullet. It's not. Anyone here tried nicotine patches? What's your intake? I am chopping low doses throughout the months so I won't forget. These are patches. Someone says to that, yes. Another says, I don't see the point. I use a vape, which is nicotine, used before the vax. I was a smoker for over 10 years, and it's how I quit. And if anything makes it, everything but my anxiety works. Yes, it helped me a lot at first, but now I'm flaring pretty badly. About 2 months in, I have been using them patches every day, tried to stop and got violently ill, vomiting, diarrhea, flu-like symptoms, and so forth. This nicotine thing is to be very cautiously approached and examined if you're all thinking about it in any way. Just be really careful.
Yeah, it's not a cure. I mean, that's the issue. Can it be helpful to mitigate some of these symptoms? Yes. Many people do report that, but by no means is it a cure.
No. So anyway, choose your guru, your internet health gurus, carefully. There are a lot of people out there pushing a lot of stuff that is just sheer garbage. Be careful. We will never lead you wrong here. We don't pretend to have all the answers, but we do our best to bring you information that is worth your consideration of. That's the best we can do. All right. Thanks, partner. Great job.
Okay.
Talk soon.
Thank you, Jeff. Okay. Good night, everyone.
And we will be right back with Hour 3 next.